On this episode of The Edge podcast, ClearEdge CEO Leslie Vickery interviews Jesse Gunther, Executive Director at Allegis Global Solutions. As someone who has climbed her way to a leadership position at Allegis over the course of 21 years with the company, much of Jesse and Leslie's conversation revolves around being a woman not only in an executive position, but in the workplace at large. Jesse shares many stories from throughout her career journey, between going after new career opportunities even when she felt like she wasn't completely qualified, uprooting her family to move across seas to London for work, and how she found her voice in the workplace. Of course, the interview also includes solid advice, like how Jesse approaches risks, something she knows a thing or two about. I hope you enjoy this episode.
Hi, everyone. This is Leslie Vickery, the CEO and founder of ClearEdge Marketing. Welcome to our latest podcast, The Edge. Today, I am here with Jesse Gunther, the Executive Director of Allegis Global Solutions. Jesse, welcome and thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me, Leslie. I'm happy to be here.
Well, you started your career as a recruiter with Aerotech over 21 years ago. For those listening, we know that's a familiar story within our industry, going from a recruiter into sales and then into a leadership role. That said, your career has taken a lot of twists and turns. It's been super exciting to learn about your background and hear more about the trajectory of what you've been doing. In fact, you like to reference it a little bit as like a jungle gym. So more like a jungle gym than a ladder, so to speak, like a traditional career path would take. So sometimes you take a step sideways or even backwards to take that next leap forward. Perhaps you can share a little bit more with our listeners about that, the journey you've taken.
I'm happy to. Thanks again for having me. I first heard that term, a jungle gym, when I read Sheryl Sandberg's Lean In. So it's certainly not my term, but it resonated so deeply with me, because as you've said, that's exactly what I've done. In fact, I've taken more steps sideways than forward. And yes, a couple of deliberate steps back. And those steps back were defining moments, for me, not only because of the humility it requires, certainly, but because of the trajectory that really changed my entire career. And, you know, I think our generation grew up with the unrealistic notion that a career is a ladder, as you said, and we also grew up believing that failure is a bad thing. So in the earlier days of my career, any lack of movement that I had felt like failure. And when I stepped backward on that jungle gym for the first time and then stepped right and then up and then left, I picked up invaluable experiences that I otherwise would never have seen. So it was freeing and enlightening. And in 21 years, as I was reflecting on this, I've held 12 different roles. And I've had the privilege of working in spaces and places I would never have considered if I allowed myself to accept the career as a ladder mindset.
Well, we'll be talking a lot about your career during this podcast and sharing some of your personal stories of challenge and triumph. So with that, you mentioned 21 years. You've been with Allegis Group for 21 years. They must be doing something right. What has kept you with the company?
Yeah, we're doing something right. There's no doubt about that. And as you know, Leslie, throughout Allegis Group, I'm not an anomaly. There are thousands of us, actually, who've had long and storied careers here. And if you surveyed them about what keeps us here, I think our culture of caring would come out on top. Most organizations, I think probably all of them, cite their people as their biggest asset, but I think very few get it right, especially when the brain gets in the way. And I've just never experienced a lack of caring at Allegis. My frustrations, which there have been many, lack of progress, as I talked about earlier, and failures, they've always been solved by the environment that Allegis has created, which allows me to really openly communicate without fear of repercussion. And as I said earlier, it's usually those fears and failures that have led to different and sometimes bigger opportunities, and certainly opportunity to grow keeps me here. And I was reflecting on that the other day, actually, when a client asked me the same question. I've been working at Allegis Group almost as long as I haven't, which means most of my life's biggest milestones have occurred here. My marriage, the births of my kids, deaths of loved ones. My dad battled cancer during my early days. That list goes on. My best friends work here. I mean, that's pretty special.
That's a really unique way to put it. You've worked there as much as you haven't. I love that phrase. And the thing that I admire the more I get to know Allegis Group and the company overall is their commitment to diversity and figuring that out as a group. I know through Kelly Van Aken's been on our podcast before with Aerotech, and I'm going to have the pleasure of speaking on the topic of diversity at your upcoming supplier summit for AGS and having presented to a local women's group here in your Aerotech office here in Chicago. The men and women of the company seem to really be behind that effort and initiative, which makes me grow to love the company even more. So I can see why you have stayed there. And you're right, it's in the thousands, which is unbelievable. So that definitely is a true testament to the leadership and the growth. And, you know, even if things change over the years, they're definitely doing something right. So speaking of doing something right, I had moderated a panel a couple of weeks ago about being your own career champion. And you have been fortunate throughout your career to have mentors and leaders champion you. And you talk a lot about when you share stories and when we first met about Chris Hartman and Chad Lane, Mike Christensen and Rick Haviland, all believing in you, Jesse, perhaps even when you didn't believe in yourself. So early in your career, you mentioned hiding some serious insecurities. So I'd love to hear a specific story of when perhaps you knew you didn't have 100% of the credentials, but you went for it anyway. And we hear, and I know you hear this a lot too in mentoring women in their careers, that women oftentimes won't go for a job if they don't have all of the credentials to do it. However, men tend to always do that. And that's a little bit of what holds us back sometimes. So I'd love for you to maybe share a specific story you had when, aside from the champions you have of your own, you being your own career champion and you really doing something unique for yourself.
Yeah, thank you. It's a great question. And it's probably the platform, the tallest platform that I stand on. And I will tell you, it's almost hard to pick a specific story because almost everything that I've done and raised my hand for, I've not felt ready for, some more than others, certainly. And you mentioned Mike Christensen, and he was the first person that said to me, fake it till you make it, back in 2004. And he brought me into so many meetings and presentations and dinners where I was over my head. So in the early days, I learned how to listen and observe really well. I watched everything and everyone around me, especially the nonverbals. And because I was often the only woman in the room, I was emulating the men in a lot of ways. And Amy Cuddy, who's got a TED Talk that I know you love as well, talks about the confidence that comes from nonverbals. So although I felt like an imposter, I didn't look like one. So as simple as it sounds, the advice that I often give is to look the part, from dress to shoes to the way you stand and sit. It matters, especially for women as much as we wish it didn't. I was reflecting on this statistic when it came out last fall, the 2017 Women in the Workplace Report. It was released, which surveyed over 200 companies comprised of 12 million employees, so a very large survey, the largest of its kind. The findings are frustrating. 50% of men believe that 1 in 10 women in leadership positions is enough. And if you stopped there, you'd all feel frustration because we battle with, you know, how men perceive women in the workplace. But what we should be more frustrated about is that 30% of women surveyed, of 12 million women surveyed, believe that 1 in 10 women in leadership positions is enough. And what that says to me is we need to raise our expectations of ourselves. And I suffer from imposter syndrome. And in short, I'm sure everyone listening knows, you know, that feeling that we don't belong. And one of the most specific examples that I can think of relative to my own experience was moving to London to take over operations in a country, and really for a region that I had, in my mind, no business being in. No knowledge of labor law, very little knowledge of cultural norms across borders, you know, but I just leaned on that whole, you know, I'm not a big fan of, you know, phrases, and the fake it till you make it thing is maybe a bit cheesy when you say it out loud, but it has worked for me. And just what I knew for sure was that the zest for learning and to sit and observe and to listen, there's no better trait than listening. As I went in through the early days of that journey of learning and leaning on partners and being very vulnerable about the fact that there were going to be things I didn't have answers to, and that was okay. So that imposter syndrome exists in high performing, mostly women, but it can work for good. But I think what it all comes down to is just expecting to be in the room. I expect to be talked about positively when I'm not in the room. And that means for my career, I'm raising my hand and taking risks even when I'm afraid. And I'm using my voice in a productive and positive way whenever possible.
Well, you know, I'm a huge Amy Cuddy fan. I've been known to take a power pose here or there to get myself in that frame of mind. And I think it surprises people a lot. I know it surprises a lot of people when they hear someone even like you, Jesse, talk about sometimes having self-doubt and feeling like an imposter. It's something that a lot of us struggle with. You know, sometimes we may be the most confident person in the room or come across that way. And sometimes inside we're questioning that a little bit, but we are putting ourselves out there and being present and making sure that in order to be heard, we need to be seen. And if we didn't do what we're doing, we would not see that number increase of the people taking the surveys. People would be okay because that's what they know. If they only see a few women or one in 10 women in the room, and that's what they know, they just grow to accept that that's what it's like. And we all know that that's not what it should be like and are looking to make that change. So I love that about you putting yourself out there and taking those risks. Speaking about risks, I know when we first met, I was thinking about all of your career twists and turns and how many risks you took. You know, sometimes people will take one, two, maybe three risks, but you just kept piling it on and doing it with grace, really putting yourself out there. So let's just shift gears for a minute and talk about your decision process when you decide to take on these risks. So again, perhaps through one of your real life stories, it could be when you decided to move to Seattle or more on the London move, or even your current role overseeing operations in India. What do you go through when you're thinking about, you know, especially when you know, maybe I'm not perhaps 100% qualified and this is going to feel uncomfortable, but I know I need to feel uncomfortable to take that risk. What are some of the things you think through? And I think our listeners will appreciate as they go through like experiences to learn from you what it is exactly that you do.
Yeah, thank you. It's a nice segue for sure. And, you know, the funny thing is I don't consider myself a risk taker in general. I'm pretty calculated and careful. I like order and control. I'm a planner. So although I talk about risk a lot and how important it is in the world we revolve in and out of, what I should be talking about is fear. And I've taken on a fair amount of scary change for sure. And although London was a bigger move, you know, in the grand scheme of things, I was more afraid of moving to Seattle because I'd never been there when I agreed to go, which is crazy in hindsight. And neither had my husband. And we'd both lived and grown up in Wisconsin. So to move to a state where we'd never been, away from everything we'd ever known, was really scary. And the process, and I don't know that it was so much a process as it was a huge trust in my leadership about the opportunity it would bring. And a massive trust in my own instincts, in my ability to succeed no matter the obstacles. And that's what we did. And it wasn't easy all the time. I will tell you, there were moments of what have we done, every move I've made, every role I've taken. Some bigger moments of what have we done than others, certainly. But there were also moments of this is the best thing we've ever done. And when we left Seattle 4 years later, it was a sad goodbye, personally and professionally. And I'd go back there in a heartbeat. So as much as I'd like to say there, you know, I go through this specific process and certainly assessing what the upside is. You know, I mean, we do the old school plus delta, you know, write down all of the positives of making a move versus the things that might not work out. And And in every case, when it comes to risk, in my opinion, the positives will outweigh the negatives. Overall, trust that opportunity would follow. And what my gut told me is what's driven every decision I've made professionally.
Well, you've been quoted as saying, while most of the leaders I had at Allegis were men, they never treated me differently as a woman. And I know even when you talk about your move to Seattle and some of the stories you share with me about your conversations as a family making the decision, as well as with the leadership team in the company helping you make that decision, they never treated me differently as a woman. To me, that is the state of equality we should reach, when it doesn't even matter. It doesn't matter if you're a man or a woman. We're treated as equals. Unfortunately, we know that isn't always the case. And I recently had someone I care a lot about in our own very industry share that she's afraid to get pregnant because of what it will do to her career. And it truly pained me to hear those words. She's afraid to get pregnant because of what it will do to her career. And that's just, it's really unfortunate. Yeah, it is not uncommon. I hear it time and time again about women wanting to start a family and feeling like even the time they start to think about it, they've got to take their foot off the gas instead of keeping it on the gas while they're doing it. So on that topic, you really credit Chad Lane to helping you in your career, in particular after the birth of your second son. You even applied for a new job while you were on maternity leave. You didn't take your foot off that pedal ever. And you spent the next 18 months traveling the world for work. And like me, you believe you can have it all. Now, I believe having it all probably means something different for me than what it means to you and what it means for anyone else. And I think that's an important message for people to know, that it is different for everyone. But how do you mentor other women and encourage them that they can have it all, whatever that may mean to them, and that it doesn't matter if they're a man or a woman?
Yeah, you know, I don't know that it's so much about subscribing to the have it all mantra so much as what I talk about is making it work. And I think we need to change the conversation, certainly the antiquated views of what it means, and just have real conversations about the possibilities and the probabilities and the sacrifices and realities of balancing a fulfilling personal life with an enriching professional one. I absolutely believe it's possible to make both work. Thankfully, there's shining examples everywhere, but there are also examples that set us back. And I think as women, and actually, you know what, women and men, we need to hold one another accountable to being real about it, because it isn't easy. There are days when we get home and cry from the stress of it. And vulnerability and authenticity, in my opinion, are two of the most powerful but underutilized assets for both men and women. I think I would be a better professional if I had worked directly for a woman, because my male leaders until recently didn't talk about the challenges of balancing the personal and the professional. You said it really well. I am indebted in that example to Chad Lane for listening to me when I told him going into my second maternity leave that I was afraid I was going to lose out on opportunity, because I saw what was happening within our division at the time. And I was very worried that while I was away, I was going to miss it. And he called me while on maternity leave and said, I told you I wasn't going to let this pass you by. And I did interview. I was a mess. I'm not going to lie. but I did.
You saw and your I was talent.
I was better for, you know, going through that process. And I actually, funny enough, I interviewed for that job and I did not get it, but I got a different job about a month later. And that job led me to my move to London. So, you know, it's funny how those things work out. But I think we have a responsibility, if we truly believe in that mantra or the idea that we can make it work, to be really real with one another, and most importantly, with those that are coming up, those that are starting families, so that we aren't having conversations with women about the fear they have of getting pregnant. That should break everyone's heart, because we're losing really great talent as a result of it. And it's why, it's funny, when I read Lean In, or got ready to read Lean In, I did not want to like that book. I hated the fact that, you know, this was a time when women in the workplace and elevating ourselves was becoming a massive topic globally. And I thought, we really have to talk about it to the extent where we're having women read books. But I read that book and it was like she was writing my story, aside from the privilege of right. planes and things like that.
Right, exactly.
But everything else was like, oh my gosh, it was like she was in my own brain. And she talked about, you know, the natural inclination to lean back when we get pregnant. And I read that book before I had my second son. And I think in hindsight, I probably did lean back a little bit with my first pregnancy, not quite sure what was going to happen. I was new to AGS during that time. And again, thankfully, even though, you know, they surrounded by these great male leaders, you know, they really embraced me and allowed me to find myself as a professional and as a working mom at the same time.
I like that, making it work, not necessarily having it all. I think we like to think there is this state of utopia that can be reached, and then you're just constantly disappointed because some days you reach it and other days, like you said, you're wondering what is going on. How did this happen? And there are so many things out of your control, both at work and at home, that you need to learn to kind of find a calm in. So again, I think what's right for you or me or other people, Sheryl Sandberg, it's going to be different for everyone, but just being able to talk about it and have those open conversations and feel comfortable sharing your fears. And again, having people be your career champion as well as yourself will make a big difference. So I think for me, having women continue to keep their foot on that pedal, even while they're thinking about starting a family, will be critical. And you hear too many stories of them taking it off before they even try to have a baby. So there's still a lot of work to be done, but I'm definitely seeing some progress there. So speaking of progress, last week you and I were writing about an article and sharing the New York Times article about the glass ceiling, and the title was the top jobs where women are outnumbered by men named John. So a quick stat, women are 50.8% of the population, men named John are 3.3%. Yet there are as many Johns as women among Fortune 500 CEOs and more Johns than women among governors. So it would seem by the numbers, at least, that we're a really long way from breaking that glass ceiling, so to speak, even in our own industry. So within our own industry, what do you think it'll take to, you know, and talk about cliche terms with the glass ceiling, but what do you think it'll take within the recruitment industry, which we're known actually as having a lot of women, but traditionally in sales and recruiting and middle management roles, but not as many in the C-suite, board, or even investor level. And certainly some companies have been pretty successful in it. But what do you think in our own industry it'll take to change that number?
Well, I think there's no question that we have to be heard. What I say to the male leaders at Allegis Group, and it is no secret that we are still very male dominated at the VP presidential, or, you know, the traditional C-suite level. And that's a very uncomfortable conversation. It's not fun to talk about. It's not fun to acknowledge, but we have a responsibility, in my opinion, to make the uncomfortable comfortable. And the best way to do that is to use our voices. We need to be heard, and it has to be done in a way that is not women coming together banging a drum about the lack of females at the top. Their action plans need to follow. And I was actually just talking to outside executive level coach about this very thing, and the advice that I was given was to be put together actual specific things that leaders like a Chad Lane and his peer set can do, which is ensuring that women are in the room, something simple at a very senior level meeting, making sure that women are being interviewed. You talked earlier about the stat that every female in a professional role is aware of, which is women don't raise their hands unless they feel 100% qualified. So unless men are saying, I really want you to raise your hand for this role, there's potential that highly qualified women are not thinking about it. We need to be championed and we need recognition. So it's the responsibility of those in senior level positions, which in this industry is very male dominated, to be those individuals that are pulling women up. When we talk about seat at the table, again, it gets a little bit cliche, but seats at the table are a lot easier to give and to take when the men are pulling them in. I went through recent survey feedback, even within our own organization. And although the tides are turning, and I feel very, very optimistic, having been a vocal voice at it and at times feeling less than optimistic, but we do still have some permeation of fear that there will be a ceiling. So there is a massive responsibility for our men leaders to take an active role, but they won't do it without the voice of the females providing those action plans behind them.
One word you said, a voice. It's one thing to be championed into the room and to have a seat, and it's another to have a voice. And I know I've had to coach and mentor some women, even when it comes to then confidence, because more than likely they're going to walk into that room, take a seat at the table, and potentially be the only woman at that table, or one of two or three out of, you know, 10, 15, 20, 30 in the room, and feeling comfortable and confident to speak up. And it all, you know, always tends to boil back down to confidence, but knowing that, like you said earlier, you belong there, to remind yourself, you belong in that room. You're in that room. Now share your voice. I had Colleen Tyner yesterday. We did a podcast with her. She's an SVP at Beeline. And something she said really stood out to me, and it was called a succession seat. So as you take on new roles as a woman, as women take on new roles, to think about, who am I succeeding? Like, who is the opportunity I'm taking for advancement in that C-suite? If that's where I, you know, if that's where I want to be. And I thought it was really interesting. It's not just to rely on the people in the position to have a succession plan, but it's to think of your own role in a succession seat, that that's where you're going. So to push yourself. So if we can, in both directions, think that way, that perhaps will make a big change with that glass ceiling in the C-suite as well.
So, I couldn't agree more, Leslie. And I know Colleen, and you know, she's a force in our industry for sure. And I think part of that, you know, something that you said sort of triggered this in my mind when it comes to succession planning is, you know, women are not always great at lifting one another up. And when we think about who we're pulling up with us and really wrapping our arms around women of the next generation and those that are going to take our jobs one day, you know, that's what's going to change not just our industry, but the world.
And you know what's fascinating is it was Brian Hoffmeyer who introduced me to both of you. So a man in our industry, a male, very passionate about supporting and lifting up women, and the women who he referred me to being very passionate about doing that as well. So times are a-changing, Jesse. They are.
I agree.
So with that, just if you were to think about 21 years ago when you got started, what advice would you have for your 21, well, not necessarily 21-year-old self, but 23-year-old self or however old you were back then, what advice would you have for yourself then that you know now that perhaps you didn't know, where kind of the new people entering in within our industry could appreciate or value hearing from you?
Yeah, you know, and without, you know, really kind of banging a drum that we've been sort of on in this conversation, for me, unequivocally, it would be use your voice and be heard, especially when you believe change is necessary. Because it took me a little while to find my voice and purpose, and I would have loved to own that confidence as a 23-year-old, because, you know, who knows where I'd be now. But I do believe everything happening for a reason. So it's not that I have regrets, but if I was standing in front of a class of, you know, 23-year-old women, I would talk about their obligation to speak up when they don't agree, to make, as I said earlier, the uncomfortable comfortable. I don't like cliches, as I said, but I tell my kids all the time, if you don't ask, the answer is always no. And women don't ask enough. I certainly didn't, but I do now.
It's something we talk a lot about. If you don't ask, you don't get yes. So we happen to have a lot in common. And one thing that we have in common is that we each have a son named Grayson. So, which is fascinating on our own stories of our own careers and having our own families as well. And something that I talk about a lot is how change can happen at home. first and foremost when parents are seen as peers and, you know, dad isn't necessarily the CEO of the family and he's, you know, the disciplinarian of how perhaps a lot of our generation was raised, which feeds into a lot of the workplace of putting, you know, men on that pedestal, so to speak, starting at home. So for me, I focus a lot with Grayson. Granted, he's only two, but it's exciting to me that he'll grow up seeing a family of equals at the home. So what really stood out to me when we first met was a story you shared about living in London. And it was the daycare story that you shared. And I'd love for you to perhaps share that. But with that story, you talked about a legacy you want to leave your boys. And we talked about mom guilt and how it can be difficult to travel. We travel a lot, both of us do, and we're not there for every activity. But at the end of the day, how they are with their future spouses will be so very different than even the generation we were raised. And that's a really great thing. That's progress for equality. So if you don't mind, would you, I know it's a very personal story, but perhaps share the daycare story and more on your legacy and why you believe it's so important.
Yeah, I'm happy to. It's definitely a favorite story. It's a tough one at the same time. You know, I truly believe I was born to be a mom of boys, and I prayed for it with my first pregnancy at age 31, and then again with my second when I was 35. And in 2012, my sons were 6 and 2. We moved to London, as I mentioned, with my husband. And that was probably the second scariest thing I'd done in my career. It was the first scariest thing my husband had done in his, because he left it to become a stay-at-home dad. A house husband is what they called it in London. That was a big, big deal. And in the first year, we had he had just turned 3 about 6 months later, and had him in nursery. And my oldest was in kindergarten. And my 3-year-old's teacher called my husband one day and she said, "I just have to share this with you. We did a unit on family, and the kids were asked to describe what their parents do. And my 3-year-old said, 'My mom goes to the office and my dad does everything else.'" And I've told that story a couple of times, and it always gets a great, you know, room full of laughs, because it is funny. For a mom, maybe not so funny, but I felt a tremendous amount of pride in my husband. And, you know, he and I spent a lot of time talking about that and a lot of time reflecting on it, because I do believe that my sons are better for the roles they've seen my husband and I play. I see it in the little men they're becoming now at 12 and 8. And I believe that as they grow up and move into what life is going to bring for them, they're going to see women in the workplace differently than the generations before them did. I think they're going to see and treat the women in their lives differently than the generations before them did. And that, if anything that I do in my professional and personal life, is a legacy that I would want on my gravestone, having raised men that have made the world better for the role they played in the women, with the women around them. And if I've gotten to contribute by being the mom that isn't always home for every event, isn't doing the baked cookies and instead buying something last minute at the store, or forgetting altogether, and all the things that working moms experience, no matter how much we travel or how many hours we work, quite frankly, it's a tough job. That's something that I just feel extremely passionate about. And I talk to my kids about it all the time. And I'm indebted to my husband for the sacrifice that he made. So I truly was okay with being the mom that went to the office and the dad that does everything else, because he was right. And I think that it will reflect in the man that he becomes.
I love that story. It's a personal favorite of mine, just also having a son and having a lot of people. And as you and I have talked about, you know, people say things and have comments and they don't necessarily know, they don't necessarily mean it when they say it, mean the way we take it, or perhaps something truly negative about it. But I get a lot, because of the work we do with women in technology and women in recruitment and just supporting female entrepreneurs. It's a passion of mine. So I always get asked, you know, don't you wish you had a little girl instead of a little boy? And I shared with you that video of where I brought Grayson into an all-women's luncheon and had a similar story of yours from a legacy standpoint, that we're sitting on a huge opportunity with our little boys to make a really big difference and see them make change and help make change for generations to come. So thank you for opening up about your story. I know they are very fortunate to have you as a mom and your husband as their dad. So
thanks, Leslie.
With that, Jesse, we're going to close our podcast, but before we say goodbye, I'm going to put you on the spot here and end with a little fun. So if you don't mind, and if you've listened to our past podcast, sometimes I throw this in, sometimes I don't, mostly do. It makes me as nervous as it does the people I ask, because I never know what I'm going to get back. But tell us one thing we don't already know about you that others may find surprising.
There are so many things I could say to this. This is actually quite silly, but I'm a big foodie, love food of all sorts, and having traveled the world, I've had the privilege of being able to try all things, and I'm quite adventurous, but I hate runny eggs.
Oh.
And with the latest craze of, you know, over easy or sunny side up eggs on pizza and all this stuff, it's really quite deflating, because for me it's not a texture thing. A lot of people don't like, it's not texture, I just don't like the taste of it. So I know it's quite silly.
There, but we have it. I will, yep, make sure that I never serve you runny eggs. Well, at my home, you wouldn't need to be worried about being served anything for me, because I'm not that great in the kitchen. But that being said, that's great to know. Thank you so much. And Jesse, truly a pleasure having you on our Edge podcast here today. People may want to get in touch with you and ask you questions and just connect and get to know you. What's the best way they can reach you?
Yeah, I'm really accessible in all forms: email, LinkedIn, Twitter. I am quite active in social media, so all of those mediums are absolutely fine.
Fantastic. All right, Jesse, thank you again, and we look forward to staying in touch.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this week's The Edge episode. If you enjoy this podcast, please rate and subscribe to the podcast in iTunes. And you can also email me at etatum, T-A-T-U-M, at clearedgemarketing.com. And let me know if you have any questions or if you want to hear about anything in particular as it relates to our Women in Staffing series or our marketing episodes. So just shoot me an email and I look forward to connecting with you. Thank you.